This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guests, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. The weather's been up and down. We've had some warm days. We've had some cold days. And then we had one day of snow.
I know. It's so weird. Last weekend, it was like in the 70s. It was like 75 or something like that. Sun was out. It was amazing weekend. And then this week, it's been borderline snowy, borderline icy. We've had all this cold, dark, wet rain. And so it was like, reminds us that we actually are still in the middle of winter. In fact, winter's just getting started.
That's right. And like this week, you know, it was 60 and 70, and then all of a sudden the temperature just dropped. I mean, it went down.
Yeah, that was a rude awakening.
And everybody was shocked, you know, that it got so cold so quick.
Yeah, I know. Well, it is January, so, yeah, it's supposed to be like this.
Well, and that one day of snow was delightful, but it left pretty quick. You know, by afternoon, by 4 o'clock, the snow was gone.
Yeah. How much did you get?
We got about 3 inches of snow, and it was wonderful. But late in the afternoon, it warmed up, and of course, it left.
Yeah. Well, at least you got a little bit of a delayed white Christmas in January.
That's right. That's exactly what it was like. We hadn't seen snow so long, we weren't sure it was snow coming down.
Yeah.
We said, we better check that, make sure that's snow.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Well,
but it wasn't. It was delightful.
If you don't have to get out in it, it's nice. If you do have to drive around, that's when things can get ugly in a hurry.
That's exactly right. So it was good that, it was a day where you didn't have to get out. You could just enjoy it and not get on the icy roads.
I don't know how people like in Chicago and stuff do that for like 6 and 8 months.
You know, I wonder how they survive it. Because in Minnesota and all those places you see where they're just marooned inside for days.
Yeah.
And they tell me they have to use oil heating because it's so cold up there.
Yeah, it's and the snow gets so deep, and I would imagine probably it would take days, if not weeks, for it all to melt because it's so thick and dense, and then they plow it and it gets piled up even further. I'd imagine it takes a long time for it to go away.
I'm thinking it does take a long, long time, and I can't imagine having to go to school if you're kids or go to work even. How do you get to work?
Yeah.
You know, I wonder how many days you have to miss every year just to survive.
Of course. They're probably used to it. They probably have ways around it, and they know what to do and drive and plow and all that. They have the equipment. But, boy, that just seems like it would be not great.
It would not be great. And I'm going to tell you how far we've come. The other day, someone I know very well was in the hospital, and they need to consult with this other doctor. Well, they didn't go in to see the doctor. He teleconferenced it. Now,
really?
Can you believe that?
I cannot believe that.
It was a teleconference deal.
They do that thing?
And she said while she had the nurses at the hospital where she's at doing things, she was on the screen with this other doctor having the appointment. I had never heard of such in all my life. I was laughing. I said, are you serious? They said, yes. We had a teleconference with the doctor right there on the screen.
Wow. I didn't even know that was possible.
Well, it's possible. They can ask you all kinds of questions. They're writing everything down, and they're doing the interview right there, and you don't even go in.
Wow.
Have we come a long way?
Is it? Does it work? Is it? Is it accurate? Is their diagnosis accurate?
Well, that I have no idea. But she said he just said, "Tell me about this, about that." I mean, just on the screen.
Huh.
Wow. And you don't even go in.
I knew that they had eye doctors that you can. I think you go into a place. You still have to go to a place, but the doctor is not actually there. They're in some other city, and I guess they just dial in on the computer or something, and they give you an eye exam from some other city.
Wow, that is scary.
Yeah.
Well, we have come a long ways, haven't we?
I know it. I know. Maybe we should get sick and go to the eye doctor more often. Experience these things.
Well, I don't even know if it'd be accurate if he's in another city.
I know it. I know it.
I don't know how they're doing it, but apparently they are. I mean, and they still get paid when it's on a screen and they're not. You're not even at their office.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
It's an amazing world we live in.
It really is. It's sometimes technology is wonderful, and then sometimes it's a little bit scary.
Yes, at least the robot didn't come in the room.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? The robot comes in and says, good morning, you know? Wow, I'd be leaving that place.
Yeah, I'd be like, well, yeah, this probably isn't going to work out very well. Of course, I'm sure robot doctors are not that far away.
Robots are here to stay. And, you know, places like Walmart is already using them in their warehouses.
Are you serious?
Yes, the robots do a lot of stuff people were doing several years ago. The robots can go and pick up packages, put in another place, do all this stuff. They just program them.
Huh. Now, I know
that a lot of companies have robots.
I think Amazon is doing some kind of robot delivery something. So there's no driver in the car. The car drives itself, and then it gets to the house, and there's some kind of a robot that gets out and puts it by the door.
Wow.
I know.
Can you imagine if a robot shows up at your house?
I know it.
That'd be pretty scary.
Yeah, if you had a question, can you ask the robot, or do you have to call somebody?
I don't know what it's programmed to do.
I don't know.
Or to answer. If it had Alexa with it, it could do it.
It probably does.
Alexa does everything, let me tell you.
Right.
My grandchildren are loving my Alexa. Wow, that's the best thing Santa Claus brought me was the Alexa.
No, I'm sure. What kinds of things are they doing with that? Are they playing songs or?
Oh, yeah, they're doing everything. And they ask her question after question. And the 3.5 years old, he loves who let the dogs out. He said, Alexa, who let the dogs out? She said, I don't recognize that. Oh, my gosh. He asked her the other day what kind of pizza she liked, and she told him.
Really?
Yes, he said, Alexa, which kind of pizza do you like? And she spoke up.
Huh. What kind did she like?
I don't even remember. I think it was Sicilian, she said.
Ooh, delicious.
Yes, I think she said Sicilian pizza.
Wow, that sounds fancy.
Yeah. But the little 3.5-year-old talks to her all the time. He asks her everything.
Yeah.
And he'll say, wake up, Alexa.
That's the only technology that young kids know. They don't even, this is what they're growing up on, talking to robots and talking to, you know, automated Alexis's things and stuff like that. They don't know anything else.
Right, and Alexa knows a lot of trivia. She'll do trivia with you. And songs, that's one of her best deals. You know, you ask her all these songs, say, you know, play children's songs, she'll do it, religious songs, modern, whatever you want. She's got all that bass in there from Amazon.
Wow.
Yes, because we listen to a lot of music from her, and the music is really good. The other day I told her I wanted her to play Elvis Presley music, and she did it.
Really?
Yeah.
Does she pick the song, or do you have to pick it for her?
No, I just said, just Elvis Presley songs. I didn't specify.
Wow.
So she did a great job of it.
Well, that sounds just fantastic. That sounds like hours and hours of fun right there.
I think so. Now, some people get disgusted because the little children are with her every minute asking her questions.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that's good. I mean, I think asking questions is a good thing.
Oh, yeah. It's how it's a learning opportunity.
That's right. And then they'll ask her to tell them some jokes. She does jokes.
Really? She tells jokes?
She tells jokes.
Well, I didn't know that.
Oh, my gosh, she does.
Are they funny?
Well, I thought so. They're you know, like children appropriate, because she knows she's talking to children.
Oh, yeah.
And they ask her all kinds, and she tells them all these jokes.
Wow.
And it was a lot of who crossed the road. It wasn't the chicken, but she had a lot of unique things that crossed the road for a different reason.
Well, that's funny. I didn't know that Alexa told jokes.
Well, you have missed out. She will tell you jokes. She will do trivia with you. She does lots of things.
Wow. Neat. I didn't know she did trivia.
Yes, she does.
Is that where you get your trivia from now?
No, because I didn't have Alexa till a month ago. and she knows Texas history.
That's
She's
really
smart.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, geez, I didn't know any of this.
Well, see, you just haven't used yours to the full extent.
Apparently not. I'm going to have to go home and just start talking to her and find out all these things that she knows.
Yeah, ask her what else she can do.
Yeah, maybe I can learn something.
Well, we've learned a lot.
Oh, that's great. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
And don't forget, people can get a wealth of information from your website, AmericanFinancialMidland.com. They can see case studies, see actual dollars amounts that people have made, and kind of get a little bit more information. And so that's what this is all about. This is all about information. And so when it comes to retiring, what is the I feel like I know what you're going to say, but what would you say is the best way to get ready for retirement?
Well, first of all, you need to line it out and say, you know, are we going to retire in 5 years, 10 years, or tomorrow? So you need to know how much interest income you're going to have. Do you have enough interest off of your assets to make it 20 or 25 years? I would like to think everybody's going to live 25 years. You know, I just saw the other day that lady lived to 107.
Really?
Well, yeah, that's a little bit past, I think, prime. I don't think we need to be living that long, but, you know, everybody is going to want to live 20 or 25 years.
Yeah, at least. I mean, you put all that hard work and all those years into, you know, going to a job every day, working, you know, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, or even longer in many cases, you want to be able to enjoy the fruits of your labor. So, yeah, I'd say that's a pretty good estimate for retirement. Do you find out that when people are looking at retirement, do they have any idea how much they're going to actually need as far as their expenses, day-to-day life?
A lot of people don't. They just know they've got this much, and how much more can I earn? You know, they may have $300,000 now. Most of them realize that's not enough. So they're trying to figure out how much is enough. How much more is it going to take to live comfortably, you know, the rest of my life?
Well, you know, and that's the thing. You know, I know that, you know, things kind of change when people retire, because you want to have, there's a couple things you want to have done. You want to have your house paid off, obviously. You want to have your vehicles paid off, boat paid off, any kind of monthly expenses, credit cards. You want to have a lot of these things paid off so that you don't have those monthly expenses. That helps you be in a better place so that you can actually enjoy more of the money that you've got coming in. So I know the dynamic changes a little bit, because then again, there's a lot of people that actually pay, you know, cash for their cars and trucks, so they may not have that as an expense while they're in the workforce. But, you know, things change a little bit. You know, there's got to be some kind of maybe scared is not the right word, but some kind of maybe intimidation about not having that steady paycheck anymore, even though there's no regular, you know, bills like that. You're kind of debt free, but you may have an emergency or something like that. And I don't know, do people plan for those types of expenses?
Well, I know that a lot of emergencies that I have heard about lately, like if people get hurt on the job, if they do not have insurance, you know, for job-related injury, they have no income while they're laid up. And a lot of people don't even think about that. And so it was brought to my attention. And I can remember years ago that we sold a lot of that. Disability insurance is what it was called. And I hadn't even thought about it in years. But I've had several people say, well, this person got, you know, you got injured on the job. Well, yeah, you can get workman's comp. But if you have insurance, you know, it'll pay all the bills, and you can, you know, recover quite nicely. If you don't, sometimes it's hard. And sometimes if something happens and you're waiting on a settlement, you know, on it, it could take time. And sometimes it puts people in a bind financially. So you have to check every box, you know. What am I doing for retirement? Okay, if I have an emergency here, is emergency money there? Do I have the insurance to cover this? And there's several different kinds of insurance people really need. You know, like I said, they need disability insurance. The other day, somebody told me a story about people out in Midland, said that the relative passed away, and the relative had no money, no nothing, and that each one had put up $2,700 to pay for the funeral.
Oh, wow.
Well, none of us want to go have to pay for a relative's funeral.
No, no.
My gosh, all they had to have done was taken out one of those little burial policies.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to say is everybody has different things they need to handle, and retirement is one of them. So retirement is just like those other things. You have to be prepared. You have to say, okay, I have emergency money here. I have this here. If they laid me off tomorrow, what do I do? Do I have enough, $300,000, $400,000, if I have to take early retirement? You know, if they lay me off and I have to retire.
Mm-hmm.
Or I've got another 5 years to go. How much money will I have in 5 years?
Hmm.
And that's the important question. How much am I going to have?
Do people have a general idea, or are they just guessing?
I think they have a general idea. They don't have it nailed down yet. I had calls this week from two or three different men, and they had talked to people that have accounts with us, and they're wanting to do this before they retire. You know, they're wanting to set up some accounts now, and that's the smartest way to do it. Don't wait till the day you retire. You know, if you can, set it up now and get interest coming in.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would do. You know, and I would not wait to the last minute and say, well, let's see what we've got here. What are we going to live on? That is not prudent.
How far in advance of actual retirement do people actually start thinking about it? Do they say, gosh, I want to retire in 6 months, let me get a handle on this? Or are most people, you know, a couple years ahead of the curve?
No, most people 5 or 6 years out, they're starting to think about it because they've got people at work that are talking to them about it. You know, they're saying, well, this is what I've done, this is what I've done. And then some of them say, well, we're fixing to have to take early retirement. When they find out those companies are going to lay them off and give them a package, then that's when they're calling us and saying, what can you do about it?
Is that a good time to do it, or have they almost waited too late at that point?
No, if it's 5 years before retirement, it's really healthy. If it's 2 weeks, then we have to really get cracking and figure out what they have that we can use. And then a lot of people say, well, I've been at the same job 40 years. I don't want to do this anymore, but I might do something else.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm going to retire, and then I may come back to the workforce after a year. And a lot of people do. You know, this togetherness at home does not work out very well. It just doesn't work.
Well, that's one way to put it.
Well, it just doesn't. You know, it's one of those things.
When people are facing early retirement, you know, say layoffs are coming, and they offer, you know, people these early retirement packages, do they come to you and they say, okay, Faye, I've got, you know, a couple hundred thousand in the bank. I wasn't planning on retirement this early. This is a huge surprise to me. It's throwing my entire plan off. What do I do? Do you ever encounter situations like that?
Well, what we do, if they get laid off, they had to take early retirement, usually they'll move that money over here to us, then they'll take another job and start a new IRA, start a new 401k. And that's a good idea. That's the way to do it. Because all these companies, when they give you early retirement, they do not want your 401k anymore. They want you to take that 401k and do something with it. So that's where we come in. We take that 401k and place it and start, you know, making them money on that.
Okay. All right. Do you find that the life settlement investment is probably, would you say that's the most popular route that people take?
I think so. Everybody that does not want to stay in the stock market are looking for something else. That's why they come to us. They say, we're looking for something different than the stock market with just a little bit more protection.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we come in.
So when people come over and they're saying, okay, I understand that I could have big gains on Wall Street. I understand I could have big losses on Wall Street. They understand the dynamic of it. They understand the risks. And so they're looking for that place, I guess that sweet spot right in the middle of the road. So with the life settlement, and tell me if I'm characterizing this right, but with the life settlements right down the middle, it's kind of like, okay, it's not going to be one of those super aggressive things where you're not going to get rich overnight. But then again, on the other hand, there's a little bit of a quote-unquote safety net so that you know that unlike Wall Street, you're not going to lose everything overnight. Is that a fair characterization?
I think it is. And I find also that it just works different. I was looking at people's accounts this week, and the people that invest regularly, keep it going all the time, they have a lot more maturities than people that just take two or three and sit there. I figured it out, that the reason I see their names all the time on maturities is that they do it consistently. They're always invested. They keep their money invested at all times. They're not sitting there with 100 or 200,000 saying, well, that policy, the other policy hadn't matured, I'm just going to sit here. And it doesn't work that way. You have to keep it invested. We had two maturities this week. One of them was $1,250,000. One was a small one, $125,000. But in the last, I think, 60 days, we've had over $4 million mature.
Holy smokes!
Yeah, we've had a lot of maturities.
Wow!
And we had more maturities in January than we did in December. But we were just looking all this up, and we've had a lot of maturities in the last 60 days.
Wait a minute. You're saying that you've had more maturities in the last 18 days than you did through the entire month of December?
Yeah, we had a lot in January. Seems like every time I turned around, there was another one. And I know that we've still got several million to deposit in the next 2 weeks.
Wow.
So that's a good thing. A lot of policies matured. But again, it was people that I'm always used to seeing on the books. You know, it's people that are consistently, you know, having maturities.
So with all these maturities coming in and all this money that people are making, what's the theory behind people not being invested and just letting their money sit there?
Well, I don't know. I don't understand that, because all the people that do not do that, that just consistently invest, their names come up all the time on policies. The people that have gotten policies that went over, they're just sitting there waiting, and they're not going to have as many maturities because they're sitting there with some cash, mm-hmm. You know. And I've got a couple of people that do that sometimes. They just sit there and wait, and even though they've got other monies, they're not doing anything with it. They're just sitting there with it in their account. But most of our clients keep invested, and they will call as soon as a policy matures and the money's in their bank. They don't want to leave it there. They want to get invested. And, of course, we're just discovering that we can make reservations for them. We can reserve before the money gets there.
Really?
So we've started to do that. We've started to reserve for them. So when the money gets there, they're already reserved for a policy, and we can just put them right in it. We don't have to go out and find a policy. We've already got it done.
Wow. So are you reserving for specific policies that you're about to fill, or just a policy that will come across your desk at some point?
No, it'll be specific policies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we always go into specific policies, not just can you invest. No, it's do you want to go into this one and how much?
Hmm.
And this last week, everybody wanted to put more in than I was thinking. You know, a lot of them put $150,000 in a policy, and I'm thinking a little bit less. I'm thinking my usual $80,000 to $90,000.
What's the
lot of people want that bigger amount?
Because of a bigger return?
Yes, uh-huh. And they just had one client that had recently put $150,000 in a policy. It just matured. He wasn't in that policy very long. And that's the first time we had let him put that much in one. And but it came due. So, you know, he was okay on it. I like that $80,000 and $90,000 mark. Seems like it works real well. But I had two or three people this week said, no, I want to do $150,000.
Hmm.
So we did it. If it's a big investor, you know, we know it's okay. They're accredited. It'll be okay.
Is a larger investment like that, is that a good idea? So when somebody's coming in for the first time and they say, okay, Faye, I got $300,000. I want you to invest this for me, and I want to do what you said the other day, and I want to go for $150,000 in a policy. Is that a good idea or not?
Well, it depends who it is. You know, some of our bigger clients, they're looking to make that $24,000 at least per policy. You know, instead of $15,000, they're wanting to make $24,000. Wow. And a lot of people, you know, it's not that big with them. But I have two or three clients that are very large, and they want to make. You know, I've got one client that wants to put $250,000 in at a time.
So they're looking for a bigger return.
They're wanting a bigger return, and they're willing to do it that way. Instead of having two or three little ones, they want to do one big one.
Would a bigger return, a larger investment, work towards somebody retiring a little bit earlier than they had planned, or does it kind of wash out?
Yes, it will, because if you get that money a little earlier, you know, it'll help.
So do you see this is becoming maybe a trend over the next maybe year or so?
Well, it seems to be. Everybody likes it. When they see how many maturities they have, you know, it makes a big difference.
Yeah. And a larger investment, well, I guess either way, a larger investment or even a smaller investment, like you say, 80 or 90 versus 125 or 150, there's no difference in the when it pays out, because it's still completely dependent on the policy and the policy holder. So it doesn't affect that at all.
That's exactly right.
All right.
And these two that we had, one was pancreatic cancer. That big one, the $1,250,000, mm-hmm. was pancreatic cancer. The other one had went over, and it was colon cancer.
Really? Colon cancer went over?
Yeah, but those pancreatics just don't go over. And so it hadn't been very long on this pancreatic cancer, but the colon cancer had went over. Isn't that strange?
That is kind of strange. I thought colon cancer was one of those, and I know every case is different, but I thought colon cancer might have been one of those that's like, hey, this is pretty serious. This may not last very long at all, and to have it go
over. It is. Usually everybody says colon cancer is one of the deadliest ones there is, but with us, it's always been pancreatic is the deadliest. You just don't make any comebacks from that. And, of course, you know, in the last 3 weeks, you know, we've had another breast cancer one. And they don't make it through that. If it's that second term especially, you know, they're not going to make it. That's all there is to it.
So what kind of policies do you have maybe that you're looking at in the next couple of weeks?
Well, we're looking at some breast cancer. I think we're looking maybe at throat cancer, several like that. We've got a couple of big policies we're looking at, and we'll see if we get the bid on those. But we're looking at several really good policies. I think one is 17 months.
Whoa, that's quick.
I know one is 17. I can't remember the length of those other two. But, yes, we've got some short policies coming up, and then we've got one that's 30 months. You know, I like those 30-month ones. Seems like they always come in early. And you know, I think that, of course, depending on which kind of cancer it is, but it seems to me like some of those do come in a little bit early.
Interesting. All right. So when people think about doing this and they're saying, okay, this sounds really, really great, but I don't understand the investment, how would you explain a life settlement to a new investor?
Well, we're simply buying life insurance policies on people that have stage 4 cancer. And we buy these through licensed providers. So they bring us the policy. We look at it. If we get the bid on it, then we have studied this policy. We've studied the doctor's reports. We know how long they say they're going to live. It may be 18 months, might be 30 months, might be 24. So we've studied all this, and we use 21st Services, we use Fasano and ABS, and they're leaders in the industry. So when they say it's going to be this many months, usually they're right. They're right more than they're wrong. Sometimes they're wrong. Anybody can be wrong. But most of the time, they've got it nailed down.
Okay.
And we send all this information to the client and tell them, this is what the policy says. It's 24 months. This is what kind of cancer. This is what the face amount is. This is what we think you should invest in. And if they like it, that's what they'll do. So then, you know, it takes us a couple weeks or so after they say yes for us to get all the paperwork done. Because remember, this has to go to the insurance carrier. They have to change the name. And the name is always changed to our trustee, Nevada Trust. And the money goes into accounts at Nevada Trust, not with us. It's not in our account. Mm-hmm. And that's what protects them. It's in Nevada Trust. They're the trustee. They make sure the premiums are paid. They always have an escrow for every policy we do. And then when the person passes away, again, the trustee, Nevada Trust, gets a certified death certificate and gets it to the carrier. All this is handled by a bank, okay?
Well, so you've got all these large institutions that are involved. So it's not like, you know, anybody's sticking any cash under a mattress or anything like that. We're talking about well-respected institutions.
Yes, I believe this is the 26th year.
Wow.
For Nevada Trust.
Really?
Yes. And the president of the bank, he came from the big bank in Chicago. He was there for years before he came and opened this trust company.
Wow.
So, you know, they know banking. They've been in banking, you know, for years.
Yeah, they know what they're doing. It's a very specific investment. I mean, you're only investing or you're only bidding on stage 4 cancer. So if somebody has stage 2, if somebody has a heart condition, if somebody has a flu, you're not bidding on policies like that. It's only stage 4. What is the benefit to investors by only buying stage 4 cancer policies?
Well, because other companies, everybody that does life settlements has a different niche. Some of them are doing those 8 and 10 years, those 7-year ones. We're not doing that. And, we've always said, you know, we want to do the shorter term. We want short term. That's why we're doing stage 4. And one of the big companies here in Texas that has outbid us all these years, they suddenly, their parent company has cut them off. And it's because, I think, and I may be wrong, I believe it's because all these they bought were like 5 to 7 years. They don't have the cash flow they thought they would have.
What?
Those are not maturing. It's going to be years away.
Mm.
So even them, as big as they are, stopped in their tracks and said no more. And in fact, the Campbell policy that we're closing out this week, we got it because the big, big company couldn't pay it. They didn't have the money.
So they dug themselves in a hole.
Yeah, the parent company said, no, we're not going to give you any more money. And they naturally bid it, and then they said, I'm sorry, we don't have the money to close.
So does that open the door for you?
It really does. I think we'll do a lot more policies this year because some of those that we wanted last year, you know, they outbid us every time because they had so much money. And, you know, they've always had about $137 million at the first of every year.
Wow.
And they suddenly don't have that this year. So that's going to make a big difference. I don't know if they'll come back in later in the year and change their mind. But right now, we're not even bidding against them.
Wow. So it's almost like your main competitor has kind of dropped out of the game.
Yeah, they've kind of moved to the side. And these other people that we're using, I think we're just going to do better. We're going to get more policies because of it, and we'll get the top choices, you know. And that's what you want. You want the very best policy that's got where they have the most problems, you know, where it is metastasized in several locations. That's what really makes it, you know, come due sooner.
Mm-hmm. So it looks like 2020 is off to a really, really good start, maybe ahead of usual?
I think it is. I think we're off to a good start because we've got two or three large policies we're going to be closing. We've got several small policies, you know, and there was one small policy this week, like $100,000. And sometimes those little small ones, and a certain person, that's just perfect for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good niche, you know. And we, a lot of big companies will not do a policy that's under $500,000. And we do it all the time.
Really? Why don't
Yeah,
why
it, do it's a lot of paperwork to do for a small policy, but we do it anyway. We buy policies if it's stage four cancer. You know, that's what we do. And we can put one of our good customers in that, and they can buy the whole thing.
And you've seen for years and years that taking that approach has paid off incredibly for your investors. I mean, it's working.
It has, yes. All those little policies, most of them have just matured just like they're supposed to.
Awesome. This is Your Money with Fay Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right there on the big street of Big Spring.
It wouldn't make any sense if they called it Little Spring. It just doesn't have the same ring to it.
It just wouldn't mean anything, you know? If it wasn't Big Spring, it wouldn't mean a thing.
Let's get into trivia. Every Saturday morning around this time, we always get into trivia. You talk about, you know, Texas history, neat places to go, all kinds of great things. So what's the topic this morning?
Well, this is a neat person who lived from the 1800s to in the 1900s. Her name was Ima Hogg.
Ima Hogg.
Now, not being from Texas, you won't know about Ima Hogg.
Uh-uh.
Ima Hogg was born in Mineola, Texas. She was born in 1882. Now, her dad made a big mistake naming her Ima Hogg. It stayed with her all of her life. She fought it. She did everything in the world. Her father was a lawyer, and he spelled it I-M-A. Well, as soon as she could get where she could write a letter or do anything, she would sign everything, I period Hogg, H-O-G-G. when her father ran for governor of Texas in later years, he said, one of her little friends went with her in the car, and he'd say, this is Ima, and you're a hog. Well, that even got worse.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, and people teased her about this. They'd say, do you have a sister named Ira? And she kept saying, I have no sisters. All she had was brothers.
Oh.
And she was the only girl in the family. And this family has done so much for Texas. When John Connally was governor, Nellie Connally said, Ima Hogg is the first lady of Texas. She did so much for the state of Texas, it's just amazing. After she was born, her dad being a lawyer, well, he did a lot of things. Her great-grandfather served in the legislature of Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi. Then her grandfather, he served in the Congress of the Republic of Texas and helped write the Texas State Constitution.
Really?
Uh-huh. And then her father was district attorney of the 7th Texas, and that expired in 84, and they moved to Tyler. Well, he practiced law for a couple of years. And then he was elected attorney general, so they moved to Austin. And she attended kindergarten there. And, he was the first native-born governor of the state of Texas.
Really?
First one. And her older brother and her went to the swearing-in with her mother and father. Then they moved into the governor's mansion. And that's when things started to happen. Of course, the building was in poor condition. It had cracked walls. It was dilapidated. Furnishings were. And they expected them to get it fixed. Well, one of her duties was to pry chewing gum from the furniture and the door moldings.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, that's what they had her doing. Well, these were rambunctious children, which a lot of them today are still the same way. They were sliding down the banisters there in the governor's mansion, and her little brother cut his chin. The dad said, that's it. So he nailed tacks along the center of the railing to stop him from sliding down the banister. And years later, people could still see the holes from the tax.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Many decades after they were there.
Wow.
And then our mother wanted to bring culture to her, wanted to teach her ladylike skills, like needlework and German and all these other things. And it just didn't take.
Mm.
And then the kids, they loved animals. Now, you know, this is in the 1800s. They had dogs, cats, they had birds, they had raccoons for pets, they had possums, rabbits, and a Shetland pony, and a parrot.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. And they used those animals, they would conduct circuses. And she was charging all these kids 5 cents. Her dad found out and made her return all the money to the other little kids. But she had all kinds of little schemes going like that. Her mother got tuberculosis. Her mother became a semi-invalid. Her mother and her moved to Colorado, and her mother stayed there till she passed away. Well, then her aunt came to take care of the household there at the governor's mansion, and her mother, her aunt told her, "You can't ever marry because this tuberculosis would just keep going." So Ima Hogg, as famous as she became, never married.
Oh.
She went to private school. Her little brothers and her older brother, they all went to public school. She started studying piano when she was 3 years old. Her favorite things, of course, was piano and some of these other things, but she said that when she got to college, she went to the University of Texas, that no freshman was ever any more immature, more unprepared, or more frightened than she was. And she joined the social clubs known as the Valentine Club. She started the first sorority on the UT campus back then. And then she moved to New York City to study piano and music. And she was going to be a concert pianist. And, of course, her mother died. And when her mother died, then she had a mental breakdown. And so she was in a hospital for a year in New York. Then she went to Philadelphia just to get well. But she later went to Vienna, and she studied in Russia to be a concert pianist. She could have been a great pianist, but she said because of her mental illness for that year that she gave all that up.
Wow.
And, she gave all that up. So then they went to Europe, her and her brothers, and one of them got appendicitis, and he died over there.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And, of course, in his will, he won $2.5 million to go to the University of Texas. And it was held up for years. They were trying to keep him from giving it to the university. So when it was finally settled, the university got like $1.8 million. And, of course, she gave millions to him. But what happened was they owned all this land in East Texas. Her father had bought the Varner Plantation, which was famous in later years, and he bought 4,100 acres.
Oh, my.
Yes. And the dadgum thing struck oil.
Really?
Their oil income was $225,000 a month.
Wow.
This is like in 1939.
Wow.
So they were very, very wealthy. They said it would be $3 million a month now in today's economy.
Oh, wow. How cool.
So she started a lot of stuff. She started a mental illness deal for children in Houston. She later moved to Houston and did so much. She started the Houston Symphony. She was called on to do things for in Washington, D.C. She did a lot of things. She knew antiques backwards, frontwards, and everything else. So all this restoration up there in Washington, she was called upon to pick things out, to tell them what was real, what wasn't, and to help. And the Kennedy Center, she did a lot of the work at the Kennedy Center.
Really?
Uh-huh. So this woman was very famous. Now, she was buying art all the time in Europe when she was over there. She had Matisse's, she had Renoir, she had every kind of art in the world. So then they started River Oaks Plantation. And River Oaks is what is the most exclusive part of Houston today. And her family started that. And, of course, they believed that everything had to be given back, that this money and all this wealth was not for them. It was unusual that they thought, you know, all of this should be given back to the state of Texas.
Wow. How cool.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And so then she was going to build a museum there in River Bend, and they were trying to stop her. The neighbors did not want her building a museum on that plantation she had. So she said to the city, well, let's just build a bridge from this part over to my plantation, which is going to become a museum, and people can park here and won't have to park on the streets and bother the people. So her museum is there in Houston, been there for years, but they gave tremendous amounts to the state of Texas through the universities. She gave millions to Houston because, you know, that was her hometown, she thought. But it's amazing her story and all the things they have done. And she died in 1975, and she was 93.
Really?
And she died in London. She was over there doing some things at the time. And she died over there and was brought back. The University of Texas declared 2 days of mourning when she died because, you know, they gave so much to the university.
You know,
her personal maid had been with her for 56 years.
Oh, wow. That's incredible. You know, I think it's great when people all of a sudden have great fortune like that, and then they give back in different ways. Not only with their time, but, you know, and also money and, you know, educating people and doing these things that will, you know, help improve other people's lives. I think it's just fantastic. It's a great show of amazing character.
Well, and the I'm a Hog Foundation, which she founded that in 1964, that was the beneficiary of her will. So the foundation was set up to give all these things, and she had received so many awards for all the things that she had done. It was amazing. Locally in Washington, she was honored at the National Trust for Historic Preservation. Everything because she gave so much, and it's just amazing to me what all she did. Southwestern University. I just can't imagine all the things she accomplished and the things that she restored. You know, the National Society of Interior Designers. She was named to their honor list in 1965 because she knew so much, and of course, she established the Houston Symphony with a scholarship. And it's just amazing. The musicians that she helped, young people. And, of course, mental health was really dear to her because, you know, she'd had that year of mental health issues.
Yeah.
So that family did an awful lot for Texas at the university level, you know, music levels, because she wanted to be a concert pianist and could have been if she hadn't had that, you know, 1 year that she was in the hospital after her mother died.
I mean, it's,
can you imagine?
Just to have the talent to be able to go over to Russia, and I mean, it's incredible. You've got to be talented to be able to do things like that. And so,
oh yeah, she went to Russia and Vienna for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah,
and she was always going to Europe. I mean, this is back when you can't even imagine people having the money to go to Europe, and she went all the time.
I know.
And then, of course, she died in London.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And that brother of hers that died of appendicitis, you know, they had trouble getting his money to the university. And another thing, Varner Plantation that made him so rich, after her father died, she was going to sell it. This is before they struck oil. And lo and behold, his will said it could not be sold for 15 years.
Really?
And that's what helped, because it couldn't be sold, and then they struck oil on it and had all that oil money.
Wow. That's you said it was like $3 million in today's currency, right?
In today's currency, that $225,000 a month that she had would have been over $3 million. And I don't think back then a person could have even spent $225,000 a month.
I know it. I'm sure we could try to find a way.
I don't believe you could have spent that much. And then she was busy giving it all away.
I know it.
And, all the presidents called on her. That's what's so amazing. You know, she helped with the Kennedy Center. Eisenhower used her. All of them did because of what she could do and how much she helped on the restorations in Washington to the buildings and things that she did.
Wow.
She's an amazing woman for her time. And they said she was small and dainty and very feminine and smart and sharp.
Oh,
can you imagine?
I can imagine that. And it sounds like she has a great personality, great character, you know, to go ahead and want to, you know, do all these things. And the thing is her the variety of I guess her charity donation net was far and wide. It wasn't just one specific group or, you know, a couple of things here and there. It was a lot of different areas, I guess, they were able to help.
Yes, it was. And another thing, they said back in 1914, a burglar broke into her house.
Really?
And, yeah, and she talked to him.
She talked to him?
He was trying to steal her jewelry. And she convinced him to return the jewelry, but she gave him a name and address and said, you go down there and you get your job. And then somebody said, why in the world did you do it? She said, he didn't look like a bad man to me. Oh, well, and another thing that happened when they, her and her father, when they were in Europe on one trip, and her brothers, they were going to take this one ship back, and she cried and she cried and said, "No, Daddy, no, we just can't take that ship." She said, "I have a real bad feeling about it." And her father listened to her, and they took a different ship back to California, and that other ship did go down.
Really?
Yeah. So she knew, somehow she knew about things, and I don't know how that was, but she had a real bad feeling about it, and she was exactly right.
Wow, that's amazing. That's fate stepping in right there.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine? And of course, you know, she restored her home, her parents' home in Quitman, Texas also, and put a museum there also. And it holds a lot of the history of Wood County and you know, of her grandfather and her great-grandfather, you know. So she did. She loved to restore all these places with the family names. And of course, the things in Houston is just really a monument to what all she has done.
And I guess to be able to do all these things, it helps to have a memorable name, and I'm a Hog is a memorable name. But I tell you, it's not the most flattering.
That's what she thought, too, all of her life. She didn't want to tell anybody, you know, how to spell it. And then she said every time she got the opportunity on her stationery, it just said Miss Hog on it. That's all it said. It did not give her first name. And I don't know what her dad was thinking of when he named her I'm a Hog.
Well, I don't know. I know a guy. His name is Charlie Monk. And he has a son that they actually legally named Chip.
Oh, no.
Yes, so he has to walk around.
Oh, that would get you in trouble.
He's Chip Monk.
Oh, my gosh. That is terrible.
It's a true story.
Oh, my gosh. That would not set well, I'll tell you. But she said it was a problem all the time. And, of course, she became so famous that people knew what that name was. They knew it was Ima.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so she would sign I, period. Just I, Hog. And, you know, I would thought the Hog name would have been hard enough.
You know,
if your name was Hog, that's tough. You know, and her dad was named Big Jim Hog.
Big Jim Hog.
Big Jim Hog. Oh, my gosh. But yeah. I think it was tragic that she never married because that aunt told her that tuberculosis would kill everybody.
Yeah.
That they would all inherit it.
Wow.
Yeah. But her brothers were just like her. They wanted to give the money away, and they all believed the same thing, that it was part of the land and it had to be given back, which is just amazing to me.
It is. I mean, especially, and I know things were different then. I know people are much greedier, you know, now than they were back then. But still, you know, there's a lot of people that would, you know, going through different things, you know, especially, you know, like, you know, people who have been through the Depression or even, you know, the crash in 2008, they have this thing of we have to hold on to everything because, you know, it could all be taken away in a heartbeat. And just for them to be able to give it away like that, it's a great testament to their character.
And the University of Texas, you know, there's no telling how many million has went there because of her foundation and the good that it has done.
Yeah, yeah.
And because, remember, they were giving money to that in the 30s,
mm-hmm.
you know, way, way back. And that foundation controls, you know, all the money that's given for all the projects that she had in mind. And they could just never have done it without all that oil money.
Yeah, really. That was a nice little treat.
And the museum in both places, no telling how many hundreds of thousands of people go to see the museum.
Yeah.
And to see everything about the Hogg family, you know, and that I think that's a great thing that she left the two museums and did them so well, you know, right there in the heart of Houston.
Yeah, that's definitely going on the bucket list for me. I gotta go over and see that.
And she was a very dainty lady.
Yeah,
very small, very dainty, and yet she was powerful.
Small lady doing big things.
Doing big things.
How cool. I'm a Hogg.
Yeah.
This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
We should talk about the risks with a life settlement, because we've obviously highlighted a lot of really great things about the investment itself. But people need to know that there are three risks going into the investment.
You know, there's a risk to everything you do.
Yeah.
If people tell you there's no risk, they're wrong. The risk on this is it can go over. You have to be prepared for some of your policies to go over. Some are going to go over, some are going to come in on time, and some will be early. We love it either way because it will balance out. I've never seen it not balance out. If you've got six policies, you may have two that go over, two that come in early, and two you know, that are on time. And I've seen people that all of them went over, but not very often. Usually all of them, I've seen so many of them come in early. It's amazing to me. So that's your biggest risk. And if you're accredited, you can withstand it because it's not going to hurt you any. The second risk is this is not liquid during the time it's invested. If you've got $100,000 in a policy, you can't spend it and you can't touch it till it matures. And then the third risk is if a life insurance company ever got in trouble, your money might be delayed, but we've never had a life insurance company go under in Texas. We've never had one not pay a claim. And all of the ones that we use are A to AA rated, and they have billions and billions of dollars. And their premium income is tremendous, so we're not worried about that.
You had mentioned real quick about if it goes over, they may have to pay premiums, but they're accredited, so it's not usually a problem. What does it mean to be accredited?
That means you either make $200,000 a year, and that can include your bonus, or you've got $1 million in assets. Either way, you can do it either way. You can do the $1 million in assets, or you can do the $200,000 a year in income. Either one will work. And you can, that does not include your home, by the way. The $1 million does not include your home.
Okay. How are you on availability for appointments this coming week? Are you open?
We will have some appointments this week and then a lot next week.
Okay. All right. Good deal. So for people to go ahead and plan to come see you, get started, start making some money, getting ready for retirement, growing their wealth, one last time, Faye, what is your phone number for people to make an appointment?
Okay. It's 877-588-3330.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.